Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Lauren Preisti. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Brandy. Good day, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Lauren Preisti, and I am a care manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you'll be transferred into a brief 5-question survey, which we will be requesting your feedback regarding the experience of today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's seminar. A handout for today's teleconference is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. Go to the left-hand side of the screen, click on Autism Awareness, scroll to the top of the screen, and you'll find today's handout. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Sharon Kerr. Dr. Kerr is a board-certified behavioral analyst doctorate and is currently the clinical director of ACES. ACES has offices throughout California and in Washington State, Texas, and Hawaii. Dr. Kerr, thank you for being here, and you are welcome to begin your presentation.
Thank you so much. First of all, welcome to everyone listening. This format's a little bit different for me. I think the good thing about this format is you can't see me, so I want you all to imagine I'm very young and attractive. But unfortunately, I'm not able to see people and gauge people's reactions. So I'm hoping that the presentation today will be interesting. I'm hoping it will be varied so that all the different people listening out there will be able to gain something from the presentation. And please, if you have questions, my contact information is at the end of the presentation, and I know we also have that question time. So let me first start by just giving everyone a little bit of a background as to how I got into this field and where I am now. I actually started working as a behavioral therapist about 15 years ago when I was doing my undergraduate degree in psychology, and I was really fortunate to be able to work with children as young as 12 months and then all the way up to individuals in their 20s. And throughout that time of working with all of those people, I was able to see them grow. And one thing that I learned is that while every individual is different and very unique, there are some universal challenges that really do transcend age, gender, functioning level, and that is that concept of independence and generalization. So that was part of the reason why I really wanted to choose this topic to be able to talk about. So if you look at the first slide, why is independence so important? Well, research indicates that even our highest functioning individuals who are on the spectrum really do have a lot of difficulty functioning independently in community environments. And I want everyone just to kind of think for a moment what that means. Think about what it means for the quality of life of that individual with autism, and think about the quality of life of their family, friends, their employers. For those of you that may be parents, maybe think about how freeing it was for you when your child learned how to dress themselves independently. It was like one less thing you had to do for them in the morning. Or maybe you think about a time when you yourself weren't able to do something independently. You had to rely on other people. So it really does have a large impact on the quality of life of individuals who are on the spectrum, and also their family, their co-workers, their employers. I mean, there are actually a lot of other costs associated with that lack of independence. If you think about the stress for parents, I mean, one of the things I hear a lot from parents of children on the spectrum is, what's going to happen to him or her when I'm old and I can't take care of him anymore? So that's very stressful to know that your child isn't at a level of independence where they can function by themselves in their community. I mean, think about just the cost of being able to provide services for individuals. They're always going to need that constant supervision. So it's really an important aspect of our programs when we're working with individuals on the spectrum. So what I want to do today is talk about how do I facilitate independence. I'm going to be giving lots of different examples in different locations, home, school, the workplace. I'm going to be giving examples about different functioning levels. But what I wanted everyone to do is just as you're listening to the presentation, seeing some of the ideas, I've tried to put some pictures in there. You know, picture paints a thousand words. I just want you to think about how you can incorporate these ideas, modify the ideas, come up with different ideas that are going to suit your situation. So the next slide, I've outlined some of the concepts that we're going to talk about today. The first one is prompting. So I want everyone to think about prompting as really an additional support that's needed to be able to complete a task. We're going to talk about the different kinds of prompts and their role in independence. I'm specifically going to go into a lot more detail about visual prompting or what we call structure, and I'm going to break that down into physical structure, a daily schedule, the work system, the visual structure, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about behavior, specifically how behavior impacts independence and also how teaching independence impacts behavior. We're going to talk a little bit about that throughout the presentation. And then I wanted to finish off the presentation with talking about individualization, so how to make these concepts work for the person that you're working with. And then generalization, how do we take the skill that we've taught that individual and generalize it to other settings, other people, so they truly are independent. Going to slide 5, there's a lot of information on this slide, but basically what I want to review with you all is that idea of prompting hierarchy. So what we mean by prompting hierarchy is the prompt or the additional support we give someone when we're teaching a task. There are different degrees of prompting. So if we actually start at the bottom, this is the most intrusive prompt, the full physical assistance. And you know, maybe you could think about teaching the skill of brushing teeth as an example. So a full physical assistance is providing that hand-over-hand guidance. So you're putting your hand on the individual's hand and moving the toothbrush. And then we want to start fading that, where it's partial physical assistance. So maybe instead of having our hand over their hand, our hand might be just on their wrist. We've moved back a little bit, and we're allowing them to do it more independently. The next step up would be modeling. So maybe just instead of touching the individual, touching their hand, it's just we're brushing our teeth and showing him or her what they need to do. And then again, we keep fading to a gesture. So instead of us actually brushing our teeth, we're maybe just, you know, motioning with our hand, the action of going up and down. And then fading it even more to a verbal prompt, so it can be direct or indirect. So direct meaning you need to get your toothbrush. So we're not showing them, we're not doing it for them, we're just telling them what they need to do. Indirect meaning we're not telling them what to do, but we're giving them some kind of a verbal cue, and it can also be nonverbal as to what's expected. So maybe instead of saying, get your toothbrush, it's we stand in front of the sink and we say, well, now what? And we shrug to indicate you need to do something. And then again, keep fading it to the visual, so having a picture or a word or some kind of visual cue that shows them what they need to do next. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about today, until you get to that last point where they truly are independent and they can perform the task on their own with no prompts and no assistance. And just, I mean, one thing to know about the prompting hierarchy is sometimes people put the hierarchy in slightly different order. It really depends on the individual, and it really depends on the task that's being taught. But that's kind of an overall picture of the way that we would teach a task and fade those prompts so that we can become more, our child can become more independent. Okay, so we're going to talk more about that visual prompting aspect, specifically structure. So we've taught the skill, we've used the physical prompting, we've faded to modeling, we've faded to verbal prompting. Now we're going to fade to that visual prompting. So if everyone is on slide 7, I just want everyone to take a look at this picture. This is Nordstrom's versus Marshall's. So I want you to kind of take a look at those environments, and I'm sure we've all been in these stores before, and just kind of think about which environment is best for a person who is on the spectrum. And maybe even, you know, think about what environment would be best for you. If you look at Nordstrom's, It's very clear where the items belong. It's clear where you need to go to find an item. If you need to put an item back, you know where to go. You probably feel more peaceful looking at the Nordstrom's picture. It's less cluttered. It's more organized. So compare that to Marshall's. There are things all over the place, things on the floor, things aren't in order. You know, if you're looking for a shirt, you know, it's not small, medium, large. It's wherever you can find it. So this slide's just to highlight how that visual structure and organization can help put an individual with autism at ease and give them information. So that kind of leads on to the next slide. That structure really helps individuals with autism to understand. They understand where to put the clothes at Nordstrom's. It helps them stay calm. I mean, you feel much calmer when everything's organized. It helps you learn better. If we're trying to teach an individual how to stack shelves at Nordstrom's versus teaching a child, or I should say an individual, how to stack shelves at Marshall's, it's obviously going to be much quicker for them to learn that skill at Nordstrom's. And it's also a form of behavior management, like I said. If you are feeling calm, you understand what you need to do, you're less likely to be demonstrating any kind of behavior. So how do I implement structure? Okay, so everyone should be on slide 10. There are four components of structure that I want to talk about today. Physical structure, an individualized daily schedule, an individualized work system, and visual structure. So starting with the physical structure. So if everyone's on page or slide 12, basically with physical structure, we want to create clear physical and visual boundaries, and we do that in a lot of different ways. So first of all, furniture. Using furniture to create boundaries that show the individual where he or she should be. So if you think about it, a classroom, you know, creates a lot of structure by using the furniture. If you think about when you're out in the community, just like going to the store, there's a lot of physical structure with the furniture, just the placement of the cash register. You know that you're on this side, the clerk's on the other side. So just using the furniture that you have to create that physical structure. Carpet and flooring. So having a rug on the floor, you often see in classrooms, there's a rug on the floor that indicates this is where we're all going to sit for circle time. Color-coded areas. Again, in classrooms, you often see there's the red table where we do math. There's the blue table where we do art. And think about a teacher that says, okay, it's time for math. If that child knows that math is the red table, then they don't need someone to physically guide them to where they need to be. They just look for the red table and they go there. So that's kind of an example of how the physical structure can create independence. Labeling the areas, and I have a picture here. Each toy, you know, we took a photo of the toy and we put that on a specific place and on the shelf, and so when it's time to clean up, we don't have to physically prompt that child to clean up. We don't have to verbally prompt them to say, the fire truck goes here, the puzzle goes here. All they need to do is look for the picture and match it. We also do this a lot in people's homes. So maybe for an adolescent who needs to learn how to do their own laundry and fold the clothes and put them away, we're going to have labels on their drawers and cupboards so they know where everything goes. Physical structure, the other part of physical structure is minimizing visual and auditory distractions. So a lot of you may know that ADHD can be comorbid with ASD, so minimizing distraction is really important. And if you can use the physical structure to minimize that distraction, that's much easier. So fluorescent lighting is often a problem for a lot of our individuals. You know, they have some sensory issues, so just even things like the lighting can be helpful. Keep the wall decorations really simple. You have too many things on the wall, our individuals with autism are going to get distracted, keeping distracting things away. And so the examples that I have here, this picture, you can see that there's nothing too much on the wall. It's actually a cubby-type desk, So the individual knows they need to go sit, they need to pull the work off the shelf and do it and put it, you know, on the right side. They're not really going to get distracted by anything in the physical environment. Okay, the next slide, number 14. This kind of goes back to a little bit of what I was saying with the classrooms, is developing those basic teaching areas. So classrooms, in particular preschools and kindergartens, are great at this. You can see that they've used the furniture, the cube chairs, to create structure. This is where circle time is. This is where you need to sit. This is where they're going to do their small group work. And then you can't see in this picture, but there's another area with tables. That's where the kids are going to sit and eat their snack. There's a play area with dolls. That's the play area. So just think about using the furniture to create that physical structure that helps that individual with autism know this is where I need to go and this is what I do when I'm in this area. And if you think about it, using that physical structure is naturally occurring in the home setting. The room with the table, that's where we have dinner. But also think about the workplace and how you can, in an office setting, potentially use the physical structure to create some clarity for the individual with autism so they know where to go and what to do. So just some important things to remember when you're thinking about the physical structure. We want to keep materials and areas consistent. So we do want to create flexibility because sometimes rigidity can be an issue with some of our individuals on the spectrum. But when it comes to the physical structure, we don't want to keep moving things around and confusing our kids. We want to keep preferred activities and materials out of sight. Again, we want to minimize those distractions and only get out the materials that you need. And really, we want to keep it simple. So the next slide, we're going to talk about the individualized daily schedule. So I want everyone just to kind of think about how many of you do use a schedule? What does your schedule look like? And then how would you feel, how would you cope if you lost your schedule? And I can feel everyone's panic. So a person who is on the spectrum really must have a schedule, just like we all do, but it needs to be developmentally appropriate, and it needs to be individually designed because it's going to help them be independent. It's going to help them understand what's expected of them. It's going to help them be able to behave appropriately. And if there are going to be changes in the day, changes in their schedule, it helps them to be able to handle those changes. Looking at slide 19, just to reiterate, the individualized daily schedule must be easy to understand. This is where the individualization comes in. We want to structure it in a way that the individual understands how to use it. We want the schedule to be able to indicate to the individual, what are you doing today? Where are you going? What's on the schedule? We want to use the schedule to teach the individual that concept of a sequence. So you need to do these things in order. First we're going to work and then you can play. First you need to do these, do these invoices and then you can have your lunch break, whatever it is. It kind of teaches that sequence. And then, like I said, it does teach that flexibility. So it is important that there are going to be changes in the schedule. Things are going to come up. Appointments may not be able to be kept. And so they need to be able to understand that changes in their routine are going to happen. Okay, and then eventually, I didn't put this on the slide, but eventually we want to teach our individuals on the spectrum to create their own schedule and to be able to follow that schedule by themselves. So how do we kind of get everyone to that point? First of all, I want to talk about just the different types of schedule. So the first one there, on slide 20, is object with object key. So if you have a look at that blue strip on the left, that's the schedule. It's from top to bottom. There's a toilet paper roll there, and there's a clothespin, a puzzle piece, a spoon, a sock. And so what we're going to do is for individuals that maybe they can't read, they're having a hard time understanding that a picture represents an object or an activity. For those individuals, we're going to use the actual object. So basically what they would do is they would take off the toilet paper roll, and given that individuals on the spectrum typically have very good visual skills, they're going to be able to match it to that picture with the other toilet roll and the little icon of the toilet, and they're going to know it's first thing on my schedule is I need to go to the toilet. And then they're going to transition back to the schedule and take the clothes peg off. And they're going to go match it. And they're going to know, oh, I'm doing some fine motor activities. And go back to the schedule. The next thing is the puzzle piece. That means they need to go to the table with the puzzles and work on the puzzles. So you can kind of see how it organizes them and helps them understand what they need to do. The next type of schedule is the photo schedule. So I know this picture is a little bit tricky to see what's on the photo, but basically the thing to remember with the photo schedule is make the photo close-up of the activity. If you're going to go to the beach, don't take a picture far back with like a million people standing on the sand. You want to take a photo close-up of the beach so they know exactly what that picture represents. We want to have the photo be clear of distraction. So, they need to know what that picture means. So with this schedule, you can see it's going from left to right as opposed to top to bottom. So either top to bottom or left to right. So the next one is using pictures with words. So these are for maybe some of our older individuals or our high-functioning individuals that are learning to read. You can see here there's like a picture of a toilet with the word toilet on it. There's a picture of a computer. There's a bus, and you can kind of see this individual here is actually starting to read more, so some of the pictures have been eliminated, and it's just the word. And these pictures with words, you can hand draw the picture. You can go to, Google Images. In the past, a lot of people use what they call Mayer Johnson symbols, board maker symbols. So there are computer packages out there that people can buy. But just, as technology has progressed, a lot of these things you can make on your own. And then we kind of want to progress all the way up to what we would typically have, which is a written schedule. So this is where you're checking off the items on your schedule. You can use a clipboard, a binder, have a schedule book. And even just over the last 12 months, with a lot of the individuals that we work with, we've actually started to use iPhones and iPads, so we're kind of catching up to the technology. But in the example that I have here, you can kind of see where he has work, and he's going to be doing social studies, and then he has his break where he gets to go outside, and then he's got more work, and then he's going to do a card game and then lunch. So you can kind of see how having this schedule with all of these activities outlined really helps the individual with autism understand what am I doing, where am I going. And that really is going to, if they can use this system and go to these places and do these things independently, it negates that need for someone to be always following them, directing them where to go or telling them, you need to go here, you need to do this. So you can kind of see how the use of schedules really helps the individual to become more independent. So, again, just, a key factor here is individualization. So think about the type of schedule you want to use. Think about the length of the schedule. Are you just going to use it during that transitionary period? Are you just going to use it for one activity and have a schedule of things to do within that activity? Is it going to be just like a first-then? First you do this, then you do this. Is it going to be part day? Maybe it's the morning routine or the nighttime routine, or is it going to be the full day? So think about it, and there's no right or wrong answer. It's whatever the individual you're working with is able to do, and then just always remembering to increase the challenge. We want to keep expecting more and more and helping our clients really reach their potential. So, go with what the level that they're at and continue to up the ante on them. Think about the mobility and the manipulation. Do they have fine motor difficulties where they can't cross it off? Does it need to be Velcro? Is Velcro too hard for them? Is it something that they can carry around with them, or does it need to be always stationary? Sometimes we have, I worked with an individual where he had to, work in different offices, and so in every room or office space, we just have like a little piece of paper with an X. So he could carry his schedule around with him, and then wherever he was, he would put it down on the X so he would never lose it. But again, thinking about the iPhones, putting them in your pocket. I also think about interest and motivation. We want to use a system that's going to be interesting and motivating for our kids to be able to follow. Okay, so the next section is looking at individualized work systems. Again, key concept of individualized. So a work system is a systematic way to understand information. The work system is going to tell you what you need to do. And obviously, if the system is telling you what to do, you're not going to need someone there standing there telling you what to do, showing you what to do. So it increases their ability to work independently. Again, it needs to be individualized, top to bottom, left to right. And we're going to see some examples later on so I can show you that. So the key thing with the individualized work system is it needs to be able to answer four questions for the individual. If I put an individual work system in front of you, you should be able to know what work, how much work, that concept of finished, and then that concept of what happens next, what do I do next. So, I mean, one thing I like to think about when explaining this concept is maybe think about the first day on a new job. You didn't know what work you had to do. You didn't know how much work was expected of you. You didn't know when you were finished, like, do I keep going? Do I wait for them to tell me to stop? You didn't know what to do next after you'd finished. So you think about that anxiety that you may have felt that first day of work of not knowing, and think about how much support, how much prompting you needed. You needed someone there all the time to tell you these things. So whereas for me on my first day of work, it might have been after the first few days, I kind of got the hang of it. I understood what was expected of me. But for our individuals with autism, they are not always able to understand that when it's not clear or when it changes, you know, to be flexible enough to understand the expectations have changed. So that's why we create these work systems that answer those questions so that they can work independently. And the other thing just to think about is really experience shows that productivity does increase when we have an understanding of what's expected of us. How do we know when we're finished? If my boss comes to me and says, I need you to review these four reports by 5 p.m., it gives me clarity about what I need to do. It tells me how much work I have to do, the four reports. It tells me when I'm going to be finished, when the four reports are done by 5 o'clock. So it does create a lot of clarity for me and helps me be more productive and more independent. So important things to remember about the independent work system. You always need to use tasks that have been previously mastered. So I'm not going to give a brand new activity or task to someone within an individualized work system because I'm expecting them to work independently, but if it's a brand new task and they've never been exposed to it, I can't really expect them to work independently. So the idea is that we teach skills and then we put those skills within this system to have them do it independently. The task really should be done in order. You think about the workplace. You've given someone, you know, I need you to do this and this and this and this, and if they just do it all in different order, it's not going to work out. So we do want to teach them that sequence as well. And we do want to teach them the idea of finish. What do I do when I'm finished? What do I do with my finished work product? So let's kind of take a look at some examples. So we should all be on slide 30. The different types of work systems. The first one we've got here is kind of a top to bottom and a left to right. So you can see the shelf on the left. There's like a blue box that's been turned into a car, a red box and a yellow box. So this individual knows that they need to complete these activities independently. They need to go sit down. They need to pull the top one off the shelf. They need to do the activity, put it back in the box. And you can kind of see for this child, we've catered it to their motivation. They're interested. Their interest, they love cars. So we create a little road on the table. So they, once they're done with the activity, they push it across the road and then put it in a finished box, which is on the floor. And then they go to the second one on the shelf, then the third. So, again, if you think about the four questions, it's clear for this individual what work needs to be done, the work that's in each box, how much work, there are three activities they need to complete, that concept of finish when everything's put in that finish box, and that concept of what's next. So on their schedule, after they've done that activity, the next thing on their schedule will direct them to where they need to go. Having a look at the next example, looking at like matching symbols, so for individuals that have better representational skills, they can and better visual skills, they can take the first picture on the left off their schedule and match it to the corresponding picture and take that basket of that basket with that activity in it and complete that one. And the next one, that circle, they match it to the table on the left, do that activity, and then the next one and so on. So you can have a system where you use matching colors, shapes, numbers, pictures, whatever works for that individual. The next example here is like a written work system, and this is something that you might see more for our older kids that can read, our high-functioning individuals. You might see this more in the workplace and in the home too. So the example here is a individualized work system using a written format to work on chores. So this particular work system is outlining the steps to looking after his dog. He has to collect the supplies, he has to get his dog Ozzy, feed and groom the dog, ask Peggy if he can walk the dog. So you can see how this could be utilized in a workplace for outlining the steps of an individual's work. You can see how it could be used in the home, like following a recipe, making dinner. So this really has a lot of utilization in a lot of different areas. I know for this particular individual, he actually had almost like an index box, like a recipe card box, where we actually had dinner routines, leisure routines, work routines, and chore routines. And so he'd go, if we said it's time to do your chores, and on his schedule we had, might have been washing the dog, cleaning up his room, and taking the trash out. So he would go to his little index box, go to the chores section, pull out those three cards, and work through those work systems to be able to complete that. And so really, if you've taught the child or the individual how to complete that routine, then once you put it in that work system, they should be able to do that completely independently. Okay, looking at different types of work tasks. So you can see the picture on the top is some Lego pieces and pictures of how to put some Lego objects together. And so you can see how this can be utilized, these self-contained tasks can be utilized for play and social skills. And the one on the bottom, you've got a flashlight there where they're having to put the flashlight pieces together. So you can kind of see how that could be utilized for a workplace setting of assembling activities or items. You know, thinking about when you go to a restaurant, you see that person getting the knife and the fork, rolling them up. I mean, those kind of things, those repetitive, structured activities, a lot of our individuals are able to do that if we teach them how to do it within that work system task. And then looking at slide 34, folder tasks. So you could use this for academic activities as well. If a child is learning numbers, letters, you know, to be able to give them these folders so they can practice these skills independently. And again, individualization, very important. Think about the visual cues you want to use. Think about the concept of finish. Are you going to have a container that says finished on it? Are you going to have them put it back on the shelf? Are you going to have them check off the item on the work system? So, again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's thinking about the individual that you're working with and how they'll best utilize the system. Again, that mobility and manipulation and the interest and motivation. Okay, so the last aspect of the structure is visual structure. So, basically, visual structure, everything that we've been talking about so far today, we really want to capitalize on the visual strengths of the individuals we work with and avoid those deficits in auditory processing. So as a general rule, and again, everyone's different, individuals who are on the spectrum do have very good visual skills and their auditory processing is often impaired. And if you think about it, the majority of people on the spectrum or not are actually better at visual processing. You know, think about if someone's reading something out to you, how often you say, just let me look at it. It's much easier to take it in and understand it if you can see it. So capitalizing on those strengths, we want to use visual instructions, visual organization, and visual clarity. So let's talk about the visual instructions first. So basically the visual instructions visually tell the sequence of the task. So instead of verbally having to tell the person, I need you to put a plate here, I need you to put the fork here and the spoon here, and then I want you to put the cup there, the visual organization of the activity substitutes those verbal instructions for visual instructions. So if you have a look at that picture on the top, really the outlines that are created on that placemat there show the individual what to do without having to verbally say it. If you look at the picture at the bottom there, we're using those written instructions. So this is an individual who his responsibility was ordering supplies. So we have all the supplies listed out. We have, you know, an actual object schedule so he can see all those different objects that he needs to go look for. He needs to write down how many we have and then how many he needs to order. So again, you can kind of see how it can be used in the home setting, it can be used in the work setting, it can be used for a lower functioning individual who may not be able to read yet, it can be used for a high functioning individual. The next slide, slide 39, is just another example of visual instructions utilizing pictures with words to teach self-help skills. So the one on the top there is washing hands. So wet your hands, get some soap, lather, and rinse. So you should be able to say to an individual, it's time to go wash your hands, and they should be able to know where to go and be able to follow these visual instructions and complete the task independently without us having to stand there and tell them what to do or show them what to do. Dressing and going to the toilet, dressing, getting in the car. So it's like a morning routine outlined with visual instructions. The next section is visual organization. So it's really how you organize your space visually to be able to give that person information so you don't have to verbally give them the information. So the example on the top here is having an individual be able to categorize pictures into different categories. So the way the activity is visually organized, you have all of the cards on the left in the bowl. You have vehicles, food, animals kind of laid out. You have the square outlining where the pictures need to go. It's color-coded. Vehicles are blue, food yellow. So you can kind of see how the visual organization, if I put that down in front of you, without me having to say anything, you would understand what you needed to do. Similarly with the picture on the bottom there, using those bowls to help create that visual organization structure of where those colored items need to go. So again, always think about, you know, if you're working with an individual and you're noticing, gosh, I'm having to do a lot for him, show a lot for him or her, or I'm having to say a lot, think about how you can replace that verbal instruction with a visual instruction. Okay, and then looking at visual clarity. In this particular activity, this is like an academic activity, we use some color coding and highlighting to be able to really identify for this individual what you need to be looking at and where you can go to find that information. So you can see there at the beginning, the top of that page, it says electronics, and it's color-coded in orange. And then if you look at the tab on the left, there's that orange tab that says electronics. So when he has to look up the price of some electronic information, he knows where to go to get that information. So it's very clear visually what the individual needs to do. Okay, so kind of moving into the last portion of the presentation, just talking a little bit about behavior. So hopefully as we have been going through some of these ideas, you can see how creating this clarity and clarifying the expectations can really help minimize frustration, minimize that maladaptive behavior. But what do you do when behavior does get in the way of independence? There are some visual strategies that you can use to help decrease some of the behaviors. So I'm just going to show you some examples here. We've got choice boards, first then strips, token boards, and a finish box. So the first picture, slide 43, we're looking at the different types of choice boards. So on the left, we actually have the object. Then we have like an outline of that object. Then we have a picture of the object, and then we have a picture with the word, and then just the word. So again, you can see how you need to individualize it to the person that you're working with. So basically a choice board, you would have choices of different things that that individual could choose. So maybe we have a communication choice board. So maybe to minimize frustration for an individual who has difficulty communicating, we're going to have a word icon or a picture icon of help, I need a break, I need more time, whatever it might be, and they can choose the item that they need. Or maybe it's leisure time, and we want to have different leisure activities for them to choose from. So the idea of a choice board gives the individual visual representations when their communication skills aren't able to help them communicate what they need, what they want. The first then strips, basically we're explaining to them what they need to do before the reward is given. So first you need to do this worksheet, and then you can play on the computer. It's a very outdated computer there. And then token boards. So basically what we want to do, if you think about independence, if we have to reinforce or reward an individual after every little thing that they do, they're really not going to be able to be independent. They're going to need someone there all the time reinforcing them. So we often use token boards to be able to stretch out how often we need to reward someone. So, you know, instead of after every question, it's after every page or after every activity. So using token boards can help motivate the individual because they know they're going to get a reward. There's that visual reminder of what the reward is, and it shows them how much more work they need to do before they get that reward. And again, you want to make it age-appropriate, and you want to make it motivating. So if the individual likes, I don't know, Justin Bieber, then we'll have pictures of Justin Bieber as tokens, whatever the case may be. Okay, so now you have all this information, where do you start? You want to look for emerging, developmentally appropriate skills. We, again, remember I said at the partway through the presentation, we're not expecting independence for an individual who's learning a brand new skill. We're looking at skills that the child has mastered. And so we're looking at what skills are they able to do, what developmentally appropriate skills are they able to do. We want to look at their strengths. What are they really good at? How can we manipulate the visual system to enhance those strengths? We want to look at functional skills. You know, when we're thinking about a written schedule, we want to have it be functional so that they can use it in different places. We want to think about parental and employer priorities. What is it as a parent that you want your child to be able to do? What is it as an employer that you want your employee to be able to do? We want to look at the child's or the individual's interests, social interests, their occupational interests. And then we really want to think about the learning style of the individual we're with. Do they get very distractible? You know, do we have to minimize the distractions for them? Is motivation difficult for them? Do we need to incorporate more motivation into the systems that we have in place? And then to finish off, we really want to, again, I've been talking about this a lot, identify ways to individualize and generalize the skills. So I know I'm probably sounding like a broken record, but the reality is that if we don't individualize it, it's not going to work. So individualization is crucial. No two systems should really look exactly the same. It should be based on the individual's learning ability, their motivation, their preferences, you know, their skill level. A generalization, so this is another one of those universal aspects that is really challenging for individuals who are on the spectrum, is we can often teach them a skill in the home setting, but then they can't do it at school. You know, we teach them how to greet so that they can say, hi, how are you? But then when we go to school, when we go out into the community, they don't know what to say. So you can kind of see how generalization is so important. Otherwise, we have to teach every skill in every different setting with every different individual at every different time. So we really do want to structure these systems to facilitate greater generalization of skills. So once the individual learns the process of following directions, looking for those visual cues in the home, we do want to transfer those visual systems to other environments. And one thing you might want to think about is if you're going to create a visual system that works in the home setting, but you're thinking, I don't know if this is going to work in the workplace or in the school, maybe collaborating with those different individuals and thinking about how could I set up the system so it is easy to transfer to other settings. And I have to say that's where the iPhones and the iPads have been really useful. Now, my last point on slide 52 is hopefully one of the most important, and if you take away nothing but this, I will be happy. It's really important to understand that we do not fade the structure over time, but we just blend it into their lives. So a lot of times I see people say, well, you know, we implemented the visual schedule, and now he knows what to do, so I'm going to fade the visual schedule. But the reality is that what needs to be done every day is different, and we need them to be flexible to be able to go in different environments with different people with different expectations. So they're always going to need that structure. I'm always going to need my things to do list. I'm always going to need my planner. I can't keep all of that information in my head. So it's really important. We don't want to fade the structure. We just want to make it more natural. We want to blend it into their lives. As their skills develop, we want the visual support to reflect that. And then we teach the individual how to look for information in different environments. So there are a lot of visual cues in the environment. We're artificially creating a lot of visual cues and structure and support, but eventually over time, we want them to be able to utilize the visual structure that they have in their natural environment to learn more naturally and to function more naturally. So again, if nothing else, really think about those two points when you are setting up a lot of these visual systems and implementing these visual systems and thinking about fading them. So hopefully I was able to give you a lot of information and some ideas that can help stimulate ideas for you and the individual that you're working with. And Brandy, I'm going to hand it over to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question 1. This session provided me with information on facilitating independence for individuals with autism. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, star 4 for strongly disagree. I'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. This session educated me on how to individualize and generalize a plan for independence for a child diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, star 4 for strongly disagree. Question 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Question 4. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. Question 5. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1. I am enrolled in the Cigna Family's First Autism Program. Star 2. I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 3, I am a family member of a child with autism. Star 4, other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, press star 1 to have your line opened into the conference. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And a prompt on your line will indicate when your line is open to ask a question. Again, that is star 1 if you have a question or a comment, and we'll pause for just a moment. And as a reminder, that is star 1 if you do have a question or a comment at this time. we will go to our first caller.
Yes, I got on the call a couple minutes late, and I wanted to know, where is the PowerPoint slide presentation located?
You can find the PowerPoint actually online at cignabehavioral.com. You're going to click on Autism Awareness on the left side of the screen, and then today's presentation will be the first one listed at the top of the screen.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And as a final reminder, that is star one if you do have a question or a comment. And there are no further questions or comments.
Okay. Thank you, Brandy. And thank you so much for attending. Thank you, Dr. Kerr, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have specific questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar next month on May 10th, 2012 at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when we will be discussing community safety issues and concerns. Thank you, and have a great day, everyone.